Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole-body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And we have the podcast Office Ladies. Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories and lots of laughs.
Follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Takes a shot, runs into the box, shot, score!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs, save more lives.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Jason Longshore. We talk soccer every Tuesday night on 92.9, sometimes a little bit earlier, sometimes after the Atlanta Hawks whoop up on Washington tonight. Sometimes we have post-Hawks celebration shows where we talk a little bit of footy. That's what we're going to do tonight. We need something to get us up after Atlanta United had a rough opener. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about MLS Week 1. We'll talk about Champions League. We'll talk about U.S. Women's National Team in the She Believes Cup. We'll talk about the 3-4-3. All of those things. But we're going to get it started with a short little segment here, looking back at Atlanta United and Cincinnati. I am joined by Madison Cruz tonight on AST. What's up, Maddie?
Oh, nothing much. Just excited to be back. Riding shotgun for this one.
Yeah, riding shotgun. You know the phrase, riding shotgun.
Yeah.
Riding shotgun. So let's talk. You talked on Full Time Report about Atlanta and Cincinnati. I talked about it for 90 minutes from TQL Stadium. You know, we've had a couple of days to think about it, look back at it. I think all in all, it's the kind of opener that was a safe expectation for this team under Tata Martino against a good team in Cincinnati, one of the best teams in the league over the last 3 years. They've been really consistent. They played well. Atlanta was competitive for a long stretch of it and gave up a goal in the 80th minute, and that ends up turning the game. I think looking back at it now on Tuesday as opposed to Saturday night, I actually feel better about it now reflecting on it.
Yeah, I think there were things that definitely made me think, okay, this is what we want to see. We're moving in the right direction. I think defensively, you might look at the scoreline and you say 2-0. Why are you saying the defense? I'm like, because there were a lot of moments too where Atlanta United were able to shut down Cincinnati. I mean, those were the best chances they've had in the game was those goals that came later. And unfortunately, you don't want to give those up. But I do think defensively, with some of those players that you've added to the roster, there has been a really good increase in what I've seen. I loved Anaya Mihai. I thought he was incredible in the game as well. Tomas Jakob, I'm sure we'll talk about him later on as well. You had these really, really cool players able to step up and get to see them. Some new players, first time seeing them in an Atlanta United kit. I think overall, I said it in Maddie's version on SDH, I think you created a baseline for what everything needs to start out with. And now it's about taking that baseline and exceeding it. And now it's taking that next step and that next step. And we got to see that throughout these next couple of games.
We'll get into it a little bit more in the next segment. But I think where I feel the best about it looking back is the structure of what Tata Martino wants to do. I feel like a lot of times when we talk about games, and this is kind of any sport, honestly, we talk about games and if a team loses, we're yelling at the coach. If a team wins, we're only talking about the players. I think in this case, you have to frame things through what the coach wants to do. You have to try to first understand what kind of soccer they want to play, what kind of basketball, you know, the Hawks want to play, what kind of football teams want to play. You have to know that and then judge it on that. And I think when you look at what Tata Martino wants his team to be, wants his team to do, they talked about it a lot in preseason. We have a pretty good idea of what he wanted. I think we saw it for the most part. I feel like it was mission accomplished for the most part. Was it perfect? No. Was it the identity that he wants? I think in general, yes. Can it be better? Yeah. Can you execute better? Yes. But I think to go from day one walking in the door with a group in preseason to game one, to see how far along they looked in the process of being what Tata Martino wants an Atlanta United team to look like, I think it was pretty good. And now you've got to find a way to do that for longer and be better at it. But I feel pretty good about the identity that has been instilled in this Atlanta United team. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about that identity a little bit. We're going to talk about two players who spoke to the media today in Marietta, goalkeeper Lucas Hoyos and midfielder Cooper Sanchez, what they had to say and how it all kind of matches up as we figure out what Atlanta United is in 2026 as they get ready to head to California and play the San Jose Earthquakes next weekend. You're listening to Atlanta Soccer Tonight live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, joined by Madison Cruz tonight, talking Atlanta United. 2-0 loss in the opener to FC Cincinnati. I feel like we have talked about it. You and Abe talked about it after the match. We've covered it. We've written about it. We know what happened roughly. It was cool today after training. We had a chance to talk to goalkeeper Lucas Hoyos for the first time. And our old friend Cooper Sanchez, the youngest starter in opening day history for Atlanta United. And it's pretty fascinating to think about the Cincinnati game through the lens of these two guys who are in completely different stages of their career. About 20 years separate them in age. Lucas, first time with the club, first time speaking to the media. Cooper, first start in an opener, second start in his first team career. And they said similar things. And I think that's another part of the things that make me feel good about this performance is that everybody seems bought into what they want Atlanta United in 2026 to be. Now it's time to execute it. You know, Cooper, I think, talked about what Tata Martino wants midfielders to be. And Lucas talked about what his role has been. What stood out to you that Lucas and Cooper had to say today?
I think it was our first time getting to chat with Lucas, and it was really great to hear from him. We saw him the first time in Atlanta United kit. He got the start against Cincinnati, and I do agree with him that it was kind of a shame, with the result, because they had been playing well. It's something we talked about, something I mentioned in post game too. I thought the first half, it was very even. I thought it was really even on both sides, especially with how the game was being balanced. The second half, Cincinnati took the reins and kind of made it more difficult for Atlanta to find anything. But I thought defensively, you were able to still hold it. You didn't allow for Cincinnati to even get good shots even then either. And Hoyos had to come up with great saves as well. And so he's getting a good start there too. And that back line is starting to form and you're getting those relationships starting to build too. And unfortunately it's just, it's a turnover in a bad spot in the attacking third. And then everyone kind of gets caught, and Cincinnati being the team that we know that they are, especially when it comes to counters. I mean, it was like a golden ticket was right in front of them and they said, "Oh, let's go. We're going to the chocolate factory. This is it. We're going there." And that's exactly what happened. We talked about Cincinnati too. I mean, they are a really fun team to watch. I mean, Kevin Denke is just an incredible striker. He's so talented, and he was able to get the attack, and he was able to find one.
I thought Cincinnati was really good defensively. I thought Miles Robinson had one of his best games since his Achilles rupture. I think it puts him back conversation with the U.S. men's national team
Miles was great.
The World Cup can be. He was outstanding. He looked fast. He looked solid. When I look back at this game, like you mentioned the turnover, and that's ultimately what decides it. It's a goal on a turnover in a transition moment and a goal from a set piece after you're down 1-0. You didn't really give up a goal from the run of play because the transition is a little bit different situation. So you can build on this. And I think talking about building, Cooper Sanchez's name has to come up. And Cooper is a guy that maybe surprised a lot of people that he got the start, but we had a chance to talk to Tata on Friday night. And it wasn't a situation of, you know, well, other guys are hurt or this or that. It was, he earned it. And I don't care how old he is. He's good enough to play. And I thought he was really good in the match, especially in the first half. Cooper Sanchez, to me, is a player who doesn't hide. And a lot of players at that age don't really want the ball in a dangerous spot. Just, they play very careful. Cooper didn't do that. And it's funny, he talked about it today. You know, he wants to take more chances and play a little more complex and not always play simple. I don't feel like he plays simple to begin with. So I like to hear him talking about taking the initiative. And I love that he used the word protagonist, since that's the word of the season.
It was funny when he said it too, because we've seen him in Atlanta United 2 games, and we go, Cooper, you weren't taking those chances already? I mean, we saw it with the twos, and I mean, even with the first team as well. It's something that Abe and I really stressed in the last segment of post game. And I didn't know Abe was going to take this there either. When we were talking about Cooper, he stopped me and he said, I want to go back to that word you said, because we've used it for other players. And by other players, we meant the homegrowns, the ones that came from the academy who've stepped up. And the word was unafraid, because these homegrowns have stepped up in big moments and they've stood the challenge. They have gone up there and they've done it. The biggest one for me that reigns true to that as well is Dominic. When Dominic was thrown in 30 minutes before and to get his first MLS start with the club, he stepped up. He wasn't being too timid when he was back there. He was getting in the attack, getting things going. Ultimately, you had that one mistake that led to the goal, but even then, it didn't deter him. It didn't bring him down. You didn't see a drop in that performance when that happened. If anything, you saw it just continue. I'm going to keep fighting, keep going. I'm going to keep defending. I'm going to keep doing what I'm going to do. And he had a really solid game. It's the same thing with Cooper. I thought Cooper stepped up. I mean, he did not look like he was 17 years old out there. He looked like he's been in the league for years. Yeah. And one thing I love that he said too was what Tata said to him after the game was, you know, he wants him to be more of a protagonist. And I think it just shows the fight within this group this season. And it's something that I really love seeing in that game against Cincinnati was how many times last season I would walk away saying, I wish there was a little bit more of that aggression, that grit, that fight, you know, that more of that being the protagonist. And I thought I saw that in the game against Cincy. I saw players going in for those tackles. I saw players getting in there, being a little bit nasty, like what Matt Edwards said earlier this season, not nasty in a mean way, not nasty as in, you know, we're going to be rude, nasty as in going and making things difficult. They made it difficult for Cincy to find something. And if anything, if that turnover doesn't happen, you're possibly looking at either a scoreless draw or maybe a 1-1 draw, depending on how things go. But it's one thing, you made it difficult for Cincy. That's good. You want to keep that mentality and everything you saw in that going forward against San Jose, because that's going to be the foundation and the baseline of everything. If you have that attitude, that's going to help you leaps and bounds going forward.
It's tricky to quantify it. And we talked about this a lot last season when words came up and Ronnie Dyla talked about the team, you know, needing to not be soft and being too nice. And there's lots of different ways to describe it. I feel like it definitely felt different in this match. It did not feel like last year's team or even the last couple of years' teams. It's hard to say, like, is it grit? Is it this? Is it that? I don't think it's an easy thing. I think it's, you know it when you see it. And to me, with this group, it felt like they were, and I'll go back to the word, it felt like they were trying to be the protagonist. Too often in the last couple of seasons for this team, it's felt like they've been reactive. They were proactive in this game. Now, I think Cincinnati took control of it because they're a very good team. And to get really specific, and we were having this conversation at lunch today with photographer extraordinaire, Sophia Cupertino, the team got split, and it's because of Cincinnati's quality. The team got split into five defenders, five attackers, and you couldn't build up out of the back because Cincinnati presses really well. So you started to play long, and then Cincinnati is outstanding in those moments because they will win headers. Nick Haglund's one of the best in league history. Miles was very good in the air in the back. Teenage Adebi was very good in the air. So they kept winning the initial ball. Okay. And then they won the second ball because that's where they thrive. They got you to play their game because they're a very good team and they've been together for a while. All right. That's your measuring stick. Talked about it coming in. Cincinnati is a measuring stick in the Eastern Conference. You're not there yet. You shouldn't be in game one.
Yeah.
Now the question is, what do you show in progress from game one to a trip to San Jose, who won 3-0 on opening weekend? Now, they played Sporting Kansas City, who is not highly regarded in 2026. I think it's going to be a rebuild job in Kansas City. The thing that jumped out to me about San Jose in early prep is they were definitely looking to get the ball wide and pump in crosses. Do you feel like, and we didn't really see a lot of crosses per se from Cincinnati, but do you feel like in a game like that, an AME High, Juan Better Call with some help from Tomas Jacob, do you feel like they can handle an aerial duel kind of battle dealing with crosses all day?
I think so. I think even from what you saw in Cincy, like you said, there wasn't a ton coming from the wings and those crosses being pumped into the box. But I mean, you saw it from the recovery runs that Tomas Jacob was making to make sure that that ball was not going anywhere near the 6-yard box, wasn't going over the goal, wasn't even getting close to the 18. I mean, his recovery runs there and his duels were impeccable in that game against Cincy. And I think Anami High, as well as Juan Betacol, and if we see Steon Gregerson, I think you have that back line, Baez too, and then Ronald as well. I think you have that formation, and I think actually they're more equipped to do that. Baez is another one that I think in the first half, you saw him track back immediately as soon as that ball was turned over, going back the other direction, getting back quickly to help defend. And that's what you need in this system of what Tata wants. When that ball gets turned over, you're trying to get back structurally defensively as quickly as you can, make sure that that ball, or win the ball again in that same position and go back the other way.
Yeah, and it's two steps to it with Tata.
It's a two-step thing, yes.
I think it's really important to kind of for people to understand what to look for here. I think we saw it in the first half when Atlanta was at its best. They were very good at, when they lost possession, immediately being disruptive and winning it back. There's a switch that has to flip when you don't immediately win it back.
Yes.
And you know, when we talk Barcelona, we talk the old Clockwork Orange, Dutch teams, and the classic stuff of this ilk of the way that you play. Usually it's about 5 seconds. It's around 5 seconds of, okay, you lose possession, go fight to win it back, go sacrifice everything, take risks. All right, you don't win it back in that 5 seconds, then you got to drop and get structured. It's not one or the other only.
Yeah.
You have to make that decision. You have to try to win it back and be aggressive. And then also know in your head, have that kind of counter going, one, two, three. All right, I got to get back.
Yep.
You have to be able to read those moments. That comes with time. And I think the team got pushed back too much against Cincinnati. Now, I think what I'm looking for from, like, this is a Tuesday conversation about a game that's coming up on Saturday. I think what I'm looking for is when turning points happen in the game. And there really wasn't like one point against Cincinnati, but it felt like it accumulated where they just like weighed you down with winning the ball back consistently and pushing you back. When that starts to happen, when things start to go against you, how do you change the momentum? Not just because I think we saw they can be resilient. I think we saw that they can hold up against that kind of pressure because they did for 80 minutes. How can you not just hold up and hold on? How can you change it? And that's what I want to see. And there's not one answer here, because it depends on the game. It depends on the team. It depends on the moment. Sometimes it's conceding the ball to the opponent and pressing. Sometimes it is slowing the game down and keeping the ball and making the other team come chase you. I think they did a little bit of that in the first half, and I kind of liked it. It's reading the game. And I think when you're building identity, you're not going to read all of those triggers and those moments in your first 90 minutes together. But your second, hopefully you read a few more of them. And that's, I'm looking for those little differences in how you handle moments and momentum swings on Saturday night in San Jose.
Well, because, yeah, I mean, it's what I was saying before. You know, it's a work in progress. It's something me and Abe threw around a lot in postgame, and I do think it is very similar to also building a foundation, having the baseline. You have one game under your belt now. Going into the second game against San Jose, you're going to expect that maybe some of those passes that didn't work in Cincy or might work a little bit better in San Jose, because you know each other a little bit more and you can read each other a bit better in those situations too. It's going to feel a little bit more natural, I think, in that game against San Jose, because you'll have that extra time. Because again, we talk about it all the time with preseason matches as well as with in-game and regular season. There's a different feel. It's always going to feel different.
100%.
And now you get that feel under your belt. You have your first game of the season knocked out of the way. You get that adrenaline back a little bit. Now you kind of get the swing of things going into San Jose. And I think I agree with you. I think I'm in the same boat of seeing maybe some of those small moments where they can almost rewrite their own fate. I mean, that's a part of being a protagonist, right? You write your own story and what you need to do in a game. And it's the same thing here. How do you force that momentum to shift back your way when the opponent has taken control? How do you do that? That's going to be, I think, the maker going into San Jose Saturday.
It's basically stacking your toolbox and knowing, okay, this problem has happened. I solve it with the wrench. This problem has happened. I solve it with the hammer. Like, you have to know what's going to solve the problem. And it just, it takes time. And I feel like we went through this a little bit in 2017 and 2018, maybe from a different position. I think the league was very different at that time as well. So maybe it was a little bit faster process. You're going to get tested in a lot of different ways. I mean, San Jose had, I think, 44% of the possession against Kansas City, but they created more chances and they had more of the field position in dangerous spots, even with less of the ball. So you would expect that Atlanta will have a good bit of the ball. It's what they do with it and what they do in those moments where San Jose gets the crowd going, things get a little crazy. How do you handle it and how do you flip it? We're going to find these answers out together. Tata Martino is going to speak to the media on Thursday, and we'll hear a little bit of that in the pregame show that you will be hosting on Saturday night. John Nelson alongside you for that one. And then Mike and I will be in, it's always scary. Mike and I will be in California for the trip to San Jose for the first time since 2018. We'll see if it lives up to that crazy game. Who knows? But Atlanta, San Jose is always crazy. We will see if this one is as chaotic as all the others. But coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight, we're going to bounce around Major League Soccer. Week one is in the books. I think we learned some things about some teams. We have some questions about some teams. We maybe still have a lot of questions to ask in general about where MLS is after 90 minutes in the books for all the teams. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. More Atlanta Soccer Tonight to come on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Sometimes it feels like the news is full of things that have never happened before, and that is not exactly true. In fact, it may have happened this very week, hundreds or thousands of years ago. I'm Sally Helm, host of the podcast History This Week from the History Channel. Trade embargoes? Thomas Jefferson tried them. Rent too high? We've been arguing about that for a while. Each episode is proof. The past isn't that far away. Listen to History This Week, available now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. Hour number two, kind of, starting on Atlanta Soccer Tonight. It's the second hour in the clock that we are on. How about that one? I'm Jason Longshore. Madison Cruz is alongside. We're talking MLS match week one. We talked a lot of Atlanta United. If you missed any part of the conversation, you can always go back on the Odyssey app if you're listening there. The rewind function is very, very cool. But you can always listen to all of our soccer content on 92.9 The Game on Off the Woodwork, the podcast. You can get it on the app from Odyssey. You can also get it wherever you get your podcasts. You can go back and listen. You can go back and listen to the full-time report with Maddie and Abe Gordon from Saturday night. You'll be able to hear the full-time report from San Jose as well, all season-long full-time reports on Off the Woodwork. Match week one in MLS. The league didn't come back quietly. It came back kind of loud. You had over 3 goals per game. That's slightly above last season's average, 46 goals across 15 games. It felt like, yeah, in some cases it was game one and you had some disjointed play, I think, in some games, which is, again, to be expected. But I think you saw, normally I feel like it takes offenses a little bit longer to get going. Defenses win out early. It felt like the other way around this time around, and maybe the headline game shows that. LAFC 3-0 over Miami at the LA Memorial Coliseum in front of 75,000 fans. The league got the spectacle that they wanted out of this one, eh?
Oh, absolutely they did. They had on-the-field drama, they had off-the-field drama, and this was my setup to let Jason just riff for a little bit about that situation. If you missed it, basically, there's a video that circulated, and it's of Messi having to be held back by Luis Suarez, of all people.
That part is funny.
Which is a wild thing. That happened, but he's going into one of the tunnels and the suites at the stadium.
Yeah.
But it got circulated because the referees also went in that way, too. So people started to spin it in the way of Messi was going after the referees and then comparing it to Matt Miazga. And this is where I'm going to give it to Jason to just go. So here you go, everybody. Hope you enjoy.
I'm going to try to give you the condensed version. It was nothing like what Matt Miazga did for FC Cincinnati. There were some fans who were trying to say it was the same thing. Matt Miazga was inside the referee's locker room berating them. And that did not happen here because the video that was shown, it's a glass door going into a hallway. Referee locker rooms, any locker rooms, don't have a glass door. You don't have a see-through door going into a locker room. That makes no sense. And a lot of people who were sharing this and speculating and stoking the fires that were happening all over the social medias know better. And it was very frustrating. Is Lionel Messi very competitive? Yes. I feel like that gets lost for some reason here when we talk about this guy. He is Michael Jordan-esque, competitive and petty. And he was upset because his team had a bad night. He didn't see a whole lot of the ball, and he didn't like how Pierre-Luc Lausier, the referee, handled the game. Okay. He wanted to keep talking to him about it. Okay. Pierre-Luc went into this hallway to go upstairs into the referee locker room, and Lionel Messi starts to go into the hallway. And then Luis Suarez is the peacekeeper of all of this, which is crazy, and gets him out of there. I think he's in the hallway for 10 seconds. He's not in the referee's locker room. He's in a hallway. None of this was a secure area. It is nothing like what happened with Matt Miazga. And I think anybody who was trying to say that it was or insinuate that it was, too many people knew better who were doing that. And it was very frustrating. If you want to fine him because he said something naughty, okay, fine. If you want to fine him because he followed the referee, if the referee told him not to follow him and he followed him, okay, fine. If you want to fine him, that's fine. I think suspending him for a game would be a gigantic reach, but whatever. It is not a 3-game suspension like you saw with what Matt Miazga happened, and it's just silliness because it distracted from the story. Shouldn't be about Lionel Messi and a referee. The story is about how good LAFC looked under Mark Dos Santos. They did. It's the same thing we just talked about with San Jose. They didn't have a lot of the ball. They looked incredibly deadly in transition moments. Denny Boyanga is one of the best players in transition moments in the world today. He is incredible. That good in these moments. Sonny also very good in these moments.
Mm-hmm.
I think the Mark Dos Santos era looks like it is picking up where Steve Cherundolo left LAFC. Incredible in transition, very hard to break down, and one of the best teams in the league in 2026.
LAFC is one of my favorite teams, especially last season and even now too. They are one of my favorite Western teams to go and watch. If we get done with Atlanta United, it's always really nice, especially when we get done with Atlanta United at 7:30 and we get done, so everything's done at 9 and I don't have to miss the West Coast game. And if LAFC is playing, I'm very happy about it because I love watching this team. And I mean, I'm not saying this also because I do love Son Heung-min as a player. I love watching him as a player. He is, there's something about him. I couldn't even explain it. I just love the way he plays the game and how intelligent.
He's explosive.
Oh, yeah. He is. And
that's what I love about him.
And he's incredible. And then Dennis Bawanga, I mean, gosh, I mean, the amount of front flips I've seen him do too. And every time he does it, I still get nervous every time he does it. But no matter what, I mean, he's just lethal in transition. He's lethal in those quick transitions. He's so good at picking the space and where he needs to go. And that is so incredible for LAFC. I mean, having Bawanga and then Sun Hyunmin, if you're like, ooh, okay, you're like, let's have some fun. And I think LAFC early on, I mean, I do think early signs supporter shield. I really do. I think if they keep this up, I could see it. I mean, they're the team that I'm looking at, I think, in the West, for sure.
I think the thing about MLS that we need to start having the conversation about is picking who's going to win MLS Cup right now on February 24th,
when MLS Cup.
Yeah, because like a playoff format, it's not about who's the best team right now. It's who's the best team at that time. Yeah. So they might not be the best team at that time.
For sure.
You know, can they win Supporters Shield? Absolutely. Because I think they're that good. And I thought they were that good last year. I thought they'd get to MLS Cup last year and they came up a round short. This is a really good team. And I think the other side of it, don't jump to conclusions about Miami either after one game. This is a Miami team that I feel like last year showed kind of who they can be under Javier Mascherano. And I think with maybe a slightly less older team now than they were last year, but it's about the big moments for them. Game one is not a big moment for Miami. They're going to be focused on CONCACAF here in the early going. They're going to play Nashville in the round of 16. Nashville got through tonight. That'll be a series that I think you'll see Miami dial it up a little bit, because Nashville looked really good in week one. I think Miami's going to be fine. They are going to step up when it matters the most. LAFC is the kind of team that can win a supporter shield. I think Cincinnati's going to be in that conversation. I think Nashville might be in that conversation. One team who won't quite be in that conversation, but I think will be very good this year, is the New York Red Bulls.
Yep.
Michael Bradley is first year as a first team manager. He really didn't have a lot of experience before taking over Red Bulls 2 last year. Mm-hmm. And he's brought a lot of his baby bulls with him up to the first team. He started a 16-year-old. He started a 17-year-old Julian Hall, who scored twice. He had a lot of teenagers in this team. Not quite as many as San Diego did later in the night. But the Red Bulls under Michael Bradley are, in my opinion, a modernized version of Red Bull soccer. You guys know how I feel about Red Bull soccer and teams that don't want the ball primarily. It's not my favorite way of playing. I don't love watching LAFC as much because I want them to be more of the protagonist in a different way. I like teams that want the ball and want to dictate it that way. I appreciate teams that are great in transition, and I appreciate and respect teams that are great in pressing. I like LAFC is not a pressing team to me. Red Bulls are a team that doesn't want the ball, that is a pressing team. But I think you're starting to see on all sides of this prism of wanting the ball, not wanting the ball, transition, counterattack, press, not press, sit back, absorb pressure, all of those corners of the prism. I feel like every side of it is coming closer to the middle. You have to be able to do more than just have a singular identity now in the game. And I think Michael Bradley is the kind of guy who can help do that for the Red Bulls and take them from a team that just does not want the ball. And if they have it, they don't know what to do with it, to a team that wants to control the game with their press. But when they got to play with the ball, they can hurt you that way too.
I think when you look at the way the game is, especially the modern way of the game now, I think the biggest thing is adaptability. And I think reactive and responses is the biggest thing, because you might go in with a game plan and how you want to play, but the opponent might come in another way, and you have to quickly adjust to what you're doing. And it's like you said, you know, sometimes you might be a team that wants the ball, you want to have possession, but you might get in a game where you don't get any of the ball. How do you find a way to get out of that and make use? And how do you get 3 points out of this? That's the thing right now when you're looking at the modernized way of the game, is it's not just clearly, oh, you have one system, this is how you play. This is another system, this is how you play. And formations, don't even get me started about formations. That doesn't matter in this situation at all. Basically, but it's how you shape out. no matter what it is, it's going to be sticking to what you want as a team. It's the same thing we talk about with Atlanta United and with Tata Martino. With the way that we play in this system, it's going to be that high press. It's going to be just relentless going forward, very fast moving.
It's going to be counter pressure.
It's also going to be that.
I draw a line. And I think it's kind of important in that, like, the Red Bulls' first thing is going to be press because they don't really want to dominate possession. They want to dominate the game by pressing you. So they'll give you the ball to press you. I think Atlanta wants to, as Tata has said, they want to control the game with the ball. So then when they don't have it, the reaction is to counter press. I feel like reactions are important. And I don't want to be like, oh, identity doesn't matter, because I think we stress that. Identity matters, but you have to have some flexibility in your identity to be able to handle when things aren't going your way. Can you play in a different way because that's what the night asks you to do? Or can you bend the game back to your identity? Some teams are going to thrive in one or the other of those. But I think you have to have a reaction in that way when you can't do what you want or it's not working. How can you go and get a result? And I feel like no matter if you're a Red Bulls team that is going to control a game by pressing, if you're an Atlanta team that's going to control the game with the ball, if you're a Miami team that's going to control the game maybe with a little bit slower pace at times, if you're an LAFC team that wants to absorb a little bit of pressure and then kill you going the other way in transition, you're going to run into an opponent who's going to take part of that away from you. How do you handle it? How do you either bend it back your way or do something different? That's what separates good teams and great teams.
And I think it ties back into, especially with the Red Bulls as well. I mean, you look at the Red Bulls too, the Baby Bulls last season, you know, they won the MLS Next Pro Championship and Michael Bradley led them to that moment. I thought the New York Red Bulls Baby Twos were really, I think they were one of the best teams in MLS Next Pro. It's proven because they won the championship, but they were just incredible under Michael Bradley. And I think the move to him becoming the head coach of the first team, I think when you see these teenagers stepping up, to me, it's not a surprise, because especially with Michael Bradley last season, he developed these guys. He knows what these guys can do. So when you're looking at a lineup and you're seeing what needs to happen, Michael Bradley's going to take a chance on some of these kids that he's known for a year now, that he's developed for a year and get the opportunity. Also, it ties back in what we just said about Cooper. If you're good enough, you're old enough. You're old enough to step up. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, Julian Hall is a big, perfect example of that. Two goals and he's only 17. And then Cooper Sanchez becoming the youngest Atlanta United player to start an opener of a match.
San Diego started five teenagers.
San Diego, too.
In their big win. You have to be willing to trust those young players. And Michael Bradley was a young player who got trusted and got an opportunity to break through. If you haven't seen his post-game speech, and I think the Red Bulls put that out, I saw it on TikTok. I think it's on pretty much all the Red Bull social media platforms. Go watch it. I will make your bold prediction of the night here at 11:15 on February 24, 2026.
All right.
Michael Bradley will manage the U.S. men's national team in a World Cup in the next decade. I think he is going to be that good of a manager. He's that good of a personality. He is that much of a legend in U.S. soccer. He is going to get that opportunity, and it might come really fast, because I think, go back and watch that speech. He is a leader of players. He was that in the locker room as a player, and I think he is going to be that as a manager. And if he adds that, the tactical nuances and the experience that he's getting right now, watch out. The Red Bulls are a team that scare me now in the Eastern Conference, seeing their performance in week one. We'll talk a lot about MLS as we go. Atlanta will be in San Jose this weekend. Pre-game coverage will start at 6:30 on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app. Kickoff will be at 7:40 Eastern. It'll be a late afternoon start from San Jose. You'll be able to listen to everything Atlanta United on 92.9 The Game in the Odyssey app this weekend. But coming up next, we're going to talk two very different things. We're going to talk Champions League, some of the big stories that came out of it today, look ahead to tomorrow's games a little bit. And then we're going to talk about the U.S. Women's National Team and the She Believes Cup, which starts over the weekend. All that's coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Are you looking for a pro football podcast that doesn't put you to sleep with spreadsheets or insult you with mindless hot takes? Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hansis and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.
When it comes to the world of soccer, we've got you covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight with Jason Longshore
on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We'll bounce around the global game in this segment. We're going to come back to the She Believes Cup, which starts over the weekend for the U.S. women's national team. A little bit different kind of roster for Emma Hayes. We'll get into that in a few moments. But let's talk Champions League, because there's a lot of talking points in it at the moment. The big shock today, Bodø Glimt from Norway. The Norwegian champions, the Norwegian league isn't even in session right now, and they are beating everybody they play in 2026. They beat Atleti. They beat Manchester City. They have beaten Internazionale of Italy in both Norway and in the San Siro. One of the biggest modern Champions League playoff upsets, Bodø Glimt. Not a financial powerhouse. They are going to go into the round of 16, and they're either going to play Sporting Lisbon or Manchester City. And I am hoping for another opportunity to see them match up with Manchester City, because, Maddie, we've talked about teams that we like and things that we like. Bodø Glimt is a team that I don't know many of their players. I didn't know much of them. I've never had a chance to watch the Norwegian league. I like their fearlessness and the way that they approach these teams that are bigger and stronger than them, and they really don't care, and they just take care of business.
Well, it's like we talk about always when it comes to other things, you know. I hate tie back to MLS, but I'm going to, you know. Playoffs, it's about when you get hot, and right now, Bodø Glimt, they're hot right now, and they're riding. I mean, they're not even in season, like you just said, and they're
They said we're gonna take this,
and we're just gonna ride, and they're going for it, and I love it. I think it's so. I will say too, as a fan of the other inner that is not, you know, blue, I'm very happy to see them go down as well. So me and Nick are happy right now.
Yes, the Milan fans. I always specify, because their name is actually not Inter Milan. That's just what everybody has kind of done it.
Oh,
English.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I always say Internazionale, because I don't want to include Milan in it, because Nick Leafy would yell at me. So
Nick,
I don't.
Yeah, Nick would fight you. But yes. As an Inter Milan fan, I'm also very, as you can
as a,
see.
As a Milan fan, not an Inter fan.
So yeah, new.
Yeah. Milan. Yeah.
Milan.
Not the blue side of things.
No.
Atleti, the red and white side of Madrid, they advance. Alexander Sorloth gets through with a hat trick to get through Club Brugge. Leverkusen, they advance pretty quietly. They take care of business in theirs. Your Magpies of Newcastle, they get through comfortably after a big first leg win. They took care of business today. So they've had their struggles in the Premier League, but in the Champions League, they've looked really strong.
Thank goodness. Thank goodness we have. No, I mean, I'm happy that we're committing strong, especially to the Champions League. Because, I mean, I think it's a great opportunity to keep pushing forward. And especially with the way that they've been playing recently, that you're getting on a good form, which has been my biggest gripe with Newcastle this season, is just inconsistency. And like, you see games where it's flashes of what it can be, and then you see another game where you're like, what happened? What went wrong? What's going on? And now I feel like they're picking up some steam a little bit, even with Champions League and even in the Premier League too. They've had a couple of decent results as well that I think are keeping things a little bit more consistent, which I like. And if that keeps going, I'm here for it. Let's go. We're moving on. Let's go. Champions League.
We'll see if Newcastle can keep moving on in Champions League. They're into the round of 16. Four games tomorrow. Atalanta, they are down by multiple goals to Borussia Dortmund. It has not been a good knockout round for the Italian clubs. Juventus chases an even larger deficit. They are at home in Turin against Galatasaray, who dominated them in Turkey in last week's match. The other two are more interesting, in my opinion. PSG hosting Monaco. Monaco scored in the first minute against PSG last time. Then they added a second one before the 20th minute. Then PSG came all the way back to get a 3-2 win. They should be fine at home. We're going to find out if PSG is getting back towards what they did last year or if it's still a little bit of a bumpy ride. Speaking of bumpy rides, we've got Real Madrid and Benfica in the second leg. If you missed the story last week, it has continued to take twists and turns. Gianluca Prestiani of Argentina and of Benfica, he was accused of racially abusing Vinicius Jr., which has happened way too many times in Vinny's career. I think all of the reactions in real time that you saw were completely valid. Kylian Mbappe yep. came to Vinny's defense, and I thought Kylian Mbappe spoke very eloquently about it to the media afterward. And he also spoke very harshly to the player on the field, which I have no problem with. Yep. The player has been suspended provisionally by UEFA as they investigate. He has said that, and this doesn't make a difference, the UEFA rules literally do not show that it makes a difference. The player from Benfica has said that he did not racially abuse Vinicius Jr., that he used a homophobic slur instead, which doesn't make it any better, and is the same suspension anyway. So he's looking at like a 10-game suspension. Benfica has defended their player to the point that they brought him on the trip, even though he is suspended. I worry about this game becoming more of a spectacle off the field than on. I thought Jose Mourinho made a fool of himself last week with some of the things he said afterwards. He has been suspended as well because of the cards that he got in that game. Benfica are not making any friends, and it feels like the entire world, with the exception of maybe Atleti and Barcelona fans, and they just won't root for anybody, are rooting for Real Madrid to eliminate Benfica in this game because of their club's actions in this last game.
Yeah, it's the whole situation. I think it's really sad that we're having to have the conversation again, mm-hmm. and it's unfortunate that it continues to be an issue in the game because it shouldn't be. I think you're right. I think it's the game that I think everyone's going to be tuning into, and I think for the wrong reasons, in the sense that it could become a really big spectacle. But it's one thing too, where I'm curious again. I mean, listen, I mean, we talk about the game and ebbs and flows, you know, the emotion of it too, as well. I think for, you know, both teams, that's going to be insane. But I do want to reiterate, I mean, this situation, it shouldn't happen. It is absolutely absurd that it happened. And the fact that we're having another conversation about something like this is absurd.
To be clear, if you missed it, the player Prestiani put his shirt over his mouth when he said something to Vinicius Jr. Vinicius, he scored a great goal. He celebrated in front of Benfica fans. Some of their players and people took exception to it. Whatever, that happens everywhere in the world every weekend.
It happens all over the place.
It happens all the time. And everything had calmed down, and then the player, Prestiani, puts his shirt over his mouth and says something, and Vinny immediately goes to the referee. Kylian Mbappe said that he heard it. Multiple Madrid players have issued statements to UEFA, signed statements of what they heard, what they saw, how everything went down. So it's being dealt with. I'm glad that he is suspended for the game provisionally, because I think it would have been worse if he was on the field.
Yep.
It's still going to be bad in the stands, potentially. It's stuff that it needs to be dealt with. It needs to be dealt with swiftly. We will see how UEFA handles it. We'll see if Madrid handles their business against Benfica tomorrow. But let's talk about the U.S. Women's National Team. She Believes Cup this weekend. It is the U.S., it's Canada, it's Argentina, it's Colombia. Three matches across 7 days. It'll feel like a World Cup group stage. The difference for the U.S. here is Emma Hayes has experimented a lot since the Olympics, which is to be expected. You have a 3-year window between Olympics and then the next World Cup. It's a little bit different kind of ebb and flow to a cycle for the U.S. Women's National Team when it comes to roster building. It feels like Emma Hayes is starting now to dial it in ahead of World Cup qualifying later this year. No uncapped players this time around. 8 players from that Olympic gold medal squad. not the full triple espresso back, but you're starting to see players get back with Mallory Swanson, with Sophia Smith, starting to get back into league play. Trinity Rodman back from injuries. I think the last window with Trinity Rodman specifically, and we talked about her contract with NWSL and Washington Spirit, it feels like she is becoming that, I don't know, almost like the sun around which everything else revolves. And some players are like that. You know, you think to Lionel Messi before he was a captain, for example. His teams revolved around him, whether he said a word or not. I feel like Trinity Rodman and her energy that she brings is what the U.S. Women's National Team revolves around right now. And it's really cool to see a player kind of embrace that moment, not hide from it, and say, yeah, I'm that player. I'm going to be that important player. I'm cool with everything revolving around me, not in a selfish way, in a way to help elevate the group.
Yeah, I think Trinity Rodman is arguably, and I'll say this too, I think she's one of my favorite players to watch, I think, in the game right now.
Yeah.
I think she's so dynamic, and it's been so unfortunate with some of those injuries that she's had that it's been that kind of wave of, okay, when are we going to see Trinity Rodman back again? When is this going to happen? And now to obviously see, we obviously saw a little bit too, you know, it was her and Emma Hayes doing a little celebration dance, which, by the way, that was hilarious.
That was so funny.
That was hilarious. But I mean, I think with Trinity Rodman, I mean, that's the exact energy you want, though. I mean, like, that's what you see from her all the time. I mean, she's taken this team on her back and she's handling it with grace, I think. And that's a big thing, especially when you look ahead to what is coming up for the U.S. Women's National Team. And I think to have that player that I think it helps build that foundation, but I think also having Trinity Rodman embrace it as well is a big thing, too, because sometimes you have a lot of times where a player will get put all this pressure and it can be overwhelming. Trinity has taken it and she's taken it and continuing to grab more and continuing to say, like, I want to have more of that. Like, let me be the person that this team can rely on. And I love that from a player. I want that from any player. I think that she's the one stepping up to do it, and she's taken it all and she's taken it in stride. I love it. I absolutely love it.
The players coming back from Europe, Sam Coffey has settled in really nicely at Manchester City. Fox has played well. Naomi Girma scored for Chelsea in their FA Cup win over Manchester United. Lindsay Heaps has been on fire in Ligue 1 Femenil. Alyssa Thompson has been playing better and better for Chelsea. It feels like this is a team that's in really good form. They will be the favorites in this tournament for sure. But how they handle kind of that flow of three games in a week's time, it will give us a good glimpse at where this program is. Will they be the favorites going into next year's World Cup? I think we'll start to be able to answer that after the She Believes Cup. And I feel like, you know, the common thread through this show has been identity. We've talked about Atlanta United's identity. I think the U.S. Women's National Team identity is really starting to come through with Emma Hayes. We've talked about it with, you know, from the New York Red Bulls to LAFC to Miami to Cincinnati, all these different teams. Identity is such a huge part of it. I feel like what Emma Hayes has built over these last 2 years since the Olympics is the identity of what she wants her U.S. Women's National Team to be. And it's a fun team to watch. If you haven't seen it, She Believes Cup matches starting on Sunday. Check these games out. Watch this team, because this is a team that is just a blast to watch. Good soccer, but big personalities as well. I really like the mix of the whole group.
I also really like as well, I think you have so many players that have, you know, more than 100 caps. You have Lindsay Heaps, Rose Lavelle, and then Emily Sonnet as well. Yep. But you have 12 players on the roster who have 10 caps or fewer. This is the first team, you know, you see that there's no player that's not uncapped.
Yeah.
But I think what's really cool about the balance of it is you have players that have a lot of caps with this team that have that experience. But you have a lot of younger players who have gotten their moment to step up and get that opportunity, and now they're being given another chance to do it, and it's more of a balance and a mix. And it's one of the big things I've loved about Emma Hayes as she stepped into this role is, like you said, she's been unafraid in bringing up some of these young players and giving them the opportunity to prove themselves wearing the crest and representing the USA. And I think that has been such a fun thing. And when we talk about identity, I think it's a big thing with Emma Hayes and this U.S. Women's National Team too, is also, I mean, that conversation of you know, being unafraid and just being who you are. And I think with what that is, you're seeing so many young players get that opportunity and are feeling confident to do it. And that's what I think is the biggest stark difference when you look at this U.S. Women's National Team. Every player that steps out onto that field, they are confident going out there. They are ready to go. They know exactly what needs to be asked of them. Emma Hayes, I think, leads this team in such grace. I think she's one of the best coaches out there right now. I think she is incredible in what she has built with this U.S. Women's National Team, not only from the younger players that you're going to see here in the She Believes Cup, but also to some of the more experienced players too, and where they have been succeeding as well.
Yeah, I think it's somebody like Emily Sonnet that I feel like Emma Hayes has helped elevate her game absolutely. To a whole different level. First game's on Sunday, 5:00. You can watch it on TNT on Universo Peacock in Spanish language, or you can make the little short trip up to Nashville and watch it at Geodis Park, USA Argentina She Believes Cup on Sunday. So that'll do it for Madison Cruz. Her night is done. She is about 75th minute substitute on AST. I will carry it from here with the 3-4-3 in the next segment. You will hear more from Maddie on Saturday. She'll be hosting, along with John Nelson, the pregame and postgame coverage for Atlanta United on Saturday night. Until then, have a good rest of the night, Maddie.
You guys as well. Thank you again for having me.
3-4-3 coming up next. 3 local stories, 4 headlines, 3 things that make me smile about this game. Coming up on the other side of the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
It's time to wrap up tonight's show with the 3-4-3.
3-4-3.
3 local stories, 4 headlines from around the world, and 3 things that made you smile about the game.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back. It's Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. I'm Jason Longshore, wrapping up the show with the 3-4-3. Brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. 3 local stories, 4 headlines, 3 things that make me smile about this game. And let's start on the local side. Number 1, Atlanta United 2. Their season begins on Sunday. Now, they'll be on the road before playing the first portion of the season in Athens, as Kennesaw State is unavailable, so you'll have to make a little bit of a trip over to Athens to see the twos, or you can listen to the matches on the SDH network. You will hear Madison Cruz, you heard earlier in AST, and myself and John Nelson calling those games all season long, as we always keep an eye on the development pathway for Atlanta United. It's called the proving ground for a reason. It's where a lot of players get their first pro minutes. A lot of academy players get that first taste of the next level. And it's where you're going to see a lot of future first team contributors like Cooper Sanchez, like Dominic Chonqui, like Matt Edwards, like Luke Brennan, like so many guys that play significant roles in this team right now. Many Atlanta United first team players came through MLS Next Pro and Atlanta United 2 first. Their season starts on Sunday. We'll have a preview on the SDH network, including head coach Jose Silva, later this week. Number 2 on the local side, speaking of Atlanta United 2, Didi Cibrian. He has signed a contract professionally with Atlanta United 2, a future Atlanta United first team homegrown. Originally from Lawrenceville, he is a product of the club's pathway. He joined at the U13 level. He was part of the MLS Next Cup finalists at the U16 level last season. Broke into the Atlanta United 2 midfield after that in the summer. And you couldn't get him out of the team. He was a huge part of the run Atlanta United 2 went on in the second half of the season. It's not about how old players are anymore. It's about, are they ready? Can they handle it? Can they keep elevating their game? And I think Didi was one last year that kept getting better and better game after game after game. He is going to be a future first team player for Atlanta United, and you'll have a chance to see him as a pro this time around with Atlanta United too. Number 3 on the local side, sad news. South Georgia Tormenta, they have pressed pause on their men's team for 2026. Their USL League One team will pause operations for this season. It is not a shutdown. The front office and infrastructure, technical staff, they will remain in place The door is wide open for a return in 2027. We're going to hear more from Darren Van Tassel and the leadership down in Statesboro at South Georgia Tormenta in the coming weeks. We'll have a lot of the coverage both here on AST and also on the SDH network. It's a big moment for pro soccer in South Georgia. Tormenta is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year, and they will continue with their academy, their community programs. Those are very important to growing the game in South Georgia. It is a shame to see this happen really on the eve of the pro season, the USL League One season. It's not what anybody had in mind for this year for South Georgia Tormenta, but I hope that this pause ends up becoming an opportunity to recalibrate things for the future in Statesboro, because South Georgia Tormenta has won the league before. Their women's team has won the league before as well. They have developed professionals. They have created stars, and I hope that they'll continue to do that in their new stadium in Statesboro in the coming years. All right, four headlines from all over the world. We're going to start in MLS. According to reports in Sportico today, MLS has begun their commissioner succession planning. So, you know, maybe the league front office isn't the most exciting part of the league, but I think Don Garber has been a huge part of why Major League Soccer is where it is. I know it's the cool thing to, as a fan, be angry at the commissioner of your league. I feel like fans at whatever league event try to be the loudest in booing the commissioner. Don Garber's been booed by fans around the league before, and I think it's a shame because I really think when you look, when his time as commissioner is all said and done, and it looks like it's going to be done next year, when you compare the commissioners of major sports leagues in the United States, and we're talking like the greats, we're talking Pete Rozelle, we're talking, you know, David Stern, I think Don Garber's name is in that conversation. He is the second commissioner of Major League Soccer after Doug Logan started and was there for 3 years, I think. Don Garber came into a league that had 12 teams and had to contract to and go back to 10 to get stronger. He's overseen Major League Soccer go from 10 teams to 30. Franchises worth $1 billion now. That didn't happen without his input, without his leadership, without his, I think, vision for where this league is. And no, he didn't come from a soccer background, but he came from a sports business background, and I think that was very important. No immediate departure timeline is in place, but his contract, I believe, is up in the summer of 2027. It might be up at the end of 2027. This is about the long-term planning for Major League Soccer and what that next era looks like. Who will take Major League Soccer into the next iteration? I don't know if we're on MLS 3.0 or 4.0 or 5.0 at this point, but it will be a new era. And whoever they choose is going to have a big job on their hands. It's not a make or break situation like it was when Don Garber took over, but it will be a can you capitalize on all of the momentum conversation? Is it going to be a grow faster or grow slow conversation? We'll find out when that next person is in place. But the process has started, according to Sportico. Number two on the headlines, we go to West Brom in England, and they have dismissed their manager, Eric Ramsey, who was previously in charge of Minnesota United last year and had a great year with the Loons. He left the Loons to go to West Brom, and he has been very poor. His teams have been very poor. I think when you look at Ramsey and his Minnesota United last year, they were a team that I did not enjoy. They were very defensive. They did not really try to do anything other than counterattack. And it just wasn't exciting soccer. And I think you started to hear that more and more and more. Now, it was effective, but it was not exciting. It started to be whispers, and then it turned into kind of loud yelling about wanting more from Minnesota in the way that they play. You're going to get that now under Cam Knowles. But will Eric Ramsey pop up again? I think this is a big dent to his reputation. A very poor run at West Brom. Didn't get a whole lot of time, but he didn't win any games either. And West Brom are in trouble in the championship. Let's go to Brazil, number three in the headlines. A manager who is definitely not in trouble, Carlo Ancelotti. According to the confirmations out of Brazil, he will stay put in Brazil, and he will potentially add on another cycle to his contract and stay for another 4 years and lead Brazil into the 2030 World Cup. He was a name that I wondered if he'd get back into the club game after this World Cup. Thomas Tuchel was another one that I thought might get back into the club game after this World Cup. Both, Tuchel has signed a new extension with England. It looks like Ancelotti will as well with Brazil. Both will be off the market for Real Madrid, for Manchester United, for some huge clubs that are going to be in the market for managers coming into the summer. Well, number four on the headlines, let's stay on the manager side of things. It's really weird in Morocco. There have been reports that Walid Regragui is going to step down as the manager for the Moroccan national team going into the World Cup. He took the team to the semifinals last World Cup. He took the team to the finals of AFCON that Morocco hosted, but they did not win. There were reports recently that he was going to step down. The Moroccan Federation has come out now and publicly denied those reports. So at least they're putting out the signal that they want to keep him. There's been a lot of media speculation. There's been a lot of negativity about their AFCON performance, but you have never had a manager who has done the things that Walid Regragui has done for Morocco. He should be the manager in place for this World Cup. And if you want to make a change after that new cycle, that's completely fine. Keep an eye on Morocco. If he steps down, I don't rate them as highly if he's not there. I think he has built this group. He deserves the opportunity to take it into a World Cup. I think they are a quarterfinal level team, perhaps a semifinal level team, but I don't think they're either one if it's not Walid Regragui in charge of that team. Let's go to three things that make me smile about the game as we close out AST. Number one, just the fact that MLS is back. I mean, you had all kinds of things, whether it's Christian Kalina standing on his head for Charlotte, whether it's San Diego with the youth movement and scoring a boatload of goals, whether it's what we saw from the Red Bulls that we talked about earlier, Cincinnati fans, very happy, Houston Dynamo fans with a big win. So many storylines. DC United with a big win over Philadelphia. It's what I love about this league. It was 15 games on Saturday and Sunday. And for me, the level is so much better than it used to be. The storylines are so much better. There's so much more to talk about. And there's so much more variety on a match week. Teams play different ways. There's different identities, different stars, different styles. I love where MLS is right now. I want to see it continue to grow, but I'm really happy about the current time frame in MLS right now as well. Number two, I talked about it. I'm going to reiterate it on things that make me smile. Atlanta United 2. I love following the twos. I love that we get a chance to call these games for the SDH network. I love that we get to see future stars with the MLS Next Pro side. It's such a huge part of the development for Atlanta United, and it is such a cool entry point for fans, for kids who follow the game. If you get a chance to go to Athens, the games are going to be free to attend. If you get a chance to go to Athens, go see this team play. Go support these young players who are trying to make their way as professionals. I have as much fun with the second team games, sometimes more fun with the second team games, because of that up and coming next level star power that you get to see debut. I mean, I remember Caleb Wiley debuting as a 15-year-old and seeing what he became. George Campbell and his rise. Like so many players, I have just enjoyed their journey that starts with Atlanta United too. And number three, look, and we talked about it to start the show. We talked about it as a through line really throughout the show. I have more optimistic feelings about Atlanta United today than maybe I did in the immediate aftermath of the loss on Saturday. The identity under Tata Martino was visible. Young players stepping up, whether it's a guy like Cooper Sanchez or young new faces like Elias Baez, like Tomas Jacob. I really enjoyed what this team was trying to be on Saturday. The ideas are translating from training, from preseason to matches. It needs to be executed better. It needs to be executed for 90 minutes. And what we talked about earlier in the show, you need to see this team be able to solve problems on the fly. That's a process. 90 minutes are in the books. There are 33 more 90-minute segments for this team in 2026. I can't wait to see how they solve problems and how they learn how to solve problems. But the identity, the young players, the ideas translating, Those things matter in February. Look, soccer never slows down, especially around here. Next week, we will talk She Believes Cup. We will talk Atlanta United. We will talk more Atlanta United too. We will talk high school soccer is really starting to pick up. We'll talk about all that next week on Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Y'all have a good evening. Adios, everybody.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
What if the thing you're listening to right now never got interrupted? What if it could play uninterrupted from room to room on Sonos? What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels? What if you really like how it feels and you become a Sonos person who can't stop saying to their friends, "What if you start with two Sonos speakers just to see how it feels?" Because it's not magic, but it's not not magic.